Elevates on a three. It's an air ball.
Wow.
And the Aces have gone the road to Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky, and stunned the number one Wildcats 67-64.
This is Aces on the Air, the official podcast for Evansville Athletics.
Craig lines it into center field, base hit. Here comes Brooks from around third. He will score, and the Aces walk it off again.
Aces on the Air is brought to you by Taroni's Pizzeria and Brewery. Claim a $3 off voucher at any 2023-2024 UE Athletics event on campus.
Sherry sends one into shallow right field. It's a base hit. Here comes Craig around third. There is no throw. Simon says game winner.
Now here's the voice of the Aces, Jevin Redman.
This is Aces on the Air, brought to you by Taroni's and powered by Learfield. Welcome in, Aces fans. I'm Jevin Redman. Glad to have you with us once again this week. Happy game week. Basketball season is here this Saturday. The Aces will play their lone exhibition game against Wabash at Ford Center. 1 o'clock tip-off, we will have the radio broadcast across the Purple Aces Sports Network starting at 12:30. The flagship station is 107.1 WJPS once again this season. We'll check in on this episode with the Hall of Famer, Scott Schreffler, my broadcast partner for a sixth straight season, and we will preview the 2023-2024 Purple Aces team, break down the roster. We'll have conversations about Coach Ragland's rebuild in year two, and also we'll just check in on the Hall of Famer, see how he is doing. And then on the second half of this podcast, we'll hear from Ziggy Ziegfried, the director of athletics. He is in year number two here at the university. Hey, if you missed last week's two episodes that we put out, it was also plenty of basketball conversation with women's head coach Robin Shear-Wells and men's basketball head coach David Ragland. Those episodes are archived on Spotify and Apple iTunes. Also, you can go to our website, gopurpleaces.com. Under the fans tab, we have all the episodes archived. So with that, let's get to our hoops conversation. And for the first time this year, the Hall of Famer, Scott Schreffler. Pods. You're on a podcast.
Yeah, I know.
It blows your mind.
When I first heard a podcast, I mean, I was so excited. It's like,
so how's it going?
Doing good. Doing good. Work's going well. And seems like just yesterday was March when we were together and summer went really quick. And yeah, looking forward to the season getting started again.
Yeah, I was just talking to Ziggy actually this morning in the hallway and just asking how things were going. And like, yeah, we're getting ready for the first game on Saturday. October just kind of been a blur. And all of a sudden, here we are, end of the month. It's time for hoops. But certainly exciting heading into year two with head coach David Ragland. You know, we've talked about this on the air quite a bit. Last year was what it was. I mean, I think we knew with the group, I don't want to say leftovers, but it was just kind of the transition period for him, almost called it year zero for Coach Ragland. But that's over with. He has some new faces in here with experience, some of his guys, and I think this year we'll start to see some strides for this program.
Yeah, I think so too. And one thing I thought was Coach Ragland did a tremendous job of last year is he knew it was going to be a tough year, but the way and going to practices and seeing how he, you know, coached in games and how he spoke on the radio after the games, he was very positive. Mm-hmm. He knew it was going to be a tough year. A lot of times I think coaches could get really frustrated and start taking it out on the players, but he knew the limitations of that team. And I thought from a professional standpoint and really understanding the psyche of human beings, athletes, whatever you want to phrase it at, I thought he did a spectacular job in keeping the most positive environment that he could throughout that tough year.
You mentioned some of the off-the-court stuff with his engagement with the community, his energy, and just being a professional through that first year. In terms of on the court, what did you like in terms of Coach Ragland's style, things they did maybe offensively, defensively? Again, kind of hard to tell last year because it wasn't his group, but what did you like about last year on the court?
Yeah, I think I'll fast forward to practice. First of all, I love his enthusiasm last year and the things he did and the way he would call timeout. And he could get on to kids without really getting in their face and getting on to them and still make his point. This year he's got his own guys in. I see him being a little more aggressive in practice towards them because there's higher expectations from some of the kids that he brought in. But, you know, he does a real good job creating a team environment. Mm-hmm. And that's from the coaches across the board to the players across the board. So the excitement's there. I mean, it is fun to go to practice. I mean, as you know, a lot of excitement, a lot of encouragement. He will stop and let the guys know when they're, you know, not doing the right thing or loafing a little bit. He doesn't hesitate to get on them, but And then he gives the coaches so much responsibility, mm-hmm. which I think is awesome as a head coach. Some head coaches want to be in the middle of everything all the time, and that voice grows old sometimes. So he keeps it fresh. He breaks it down. I mean, he'll come over and talk to me and you while some drills are going on, and then he'll get up, you know, go coach, correct the kid in a drill or something, then go back and let the coach continue, and then go to the other end, just kind of observe. But he really gives the coaches a lot of responsibility, and he holds them accountable for what they're doing.
I was going to mention the coaching staff. For the most of the coaches, it's year two with Coach Ragland. I was going to ask you what you thought. How big of a deal is that just in terms of comfort level? You do bring in Peter Funk, who's a new face, but he knew Coach Ragland from his days at Valparaiso. Also, DJ Ballantyne is back as director of player development. But you mentioned more power for the coaches. I know Coach Snow focuses on defense. You've got Roosevelt and Peter more so on offense. I think Coach Swanson's defense as well. Mm-hmm. One thing Ragland mentioned to me last week is they're changing up how they do their scouts. You know, typically it'd be one person is in charge of Northern Iowa, the other person in charge of Drake. Well, now they're almost having three coaches responsible for one scout. One might focus on the offense, one might focus on the defense, and then you have another person focusing on just player tendencies. So how big do you think, or how impactful will it be year two, just that comfort level, you think, with the coaches?
Well, their chemistry is outstanding. You know, it was pretty good last year. This year it's really good. Yeah. I mean, across the board, DJ Ballantyne and adding Peter to the mix as coaches, I think DJ's got a really bright future in coaching. Matter of fact, when I went to the scrimmage a couple weeks ago, I think you were there too. No, you had. Did you miss that scrimmage?
I missed that one.
At the Ford Center. But he was in charge of one of the he was coaching one of the teams, and mm-hmm. I was really impressed on his play calling. He was noticing things and called a special play where he knew they're going to switch, and the guy setting the screen slipped right to the basket, and boom, they hit him, easy basket. So he's got really, really good basketball IQ. So as far as the scouting goes, I think that's good, because I've been in that position. You know, when I was assistant coach at Stetson, I was in charge of every single scouting report, every single game. And that is a load on a coach when you're trying to break down their defense and what they do offensively, and then come up with the players' tendencies and making this, you know, as perfect scouting report as you can. It takes a lot of time. It's a load, and you miss some things, right? So I think breaking it up like that, I think that's a great idea. I don't know if he came up with himself, or, you know, maybe that's a new trend in college coaching. I'm not sure, but I do think that'll be a nice concept.
What year number is this for you calling games on the radio?
Well, I'm not very good at math, as you know. You've been around me for the last 4 or 5 years. I think I started in 2001. So this will be, what, my 23rd year coming up? Yeah, so it's funny. I was on the staff here for 2 years, and then gender equity issue hit with us losing football. So they had to eliminate my position on the staff. So I went over to the development office. They created a position called athletic development, which we didn't have at the time. And I was kind of in charge of that and got that going. I raised a lot of money for the baseball stadium, the softball stadium here, naming rights of different things. And Brent Kell was the color guy at that time. He was stepping down, and I'd done some color when we met on the road when Brent couldn't be there. Mm-hmm. So I'd step in and do something. I really liked it. I was like, man, I'd really like to have that opportunity to jump in there. So it worked out well, and been doing it ever since. I just tell everybody always asks me, they say, are you doing the color again this year? I say, well, usually I just show up if the seat's open. I sit in it, and if somebody else is there, I guess I'm done.
What do you enjoy most about it? I mean, I'm assuming it keeps you around the game, obviously, those relationships with players and coaches. I mean, what do you enjoy most about that position?
Yeah, I really, you know, just like college, I'm a college basketball junkie, so, but just to be on the insides and, you know, coming to practice. I love coming to practice a day or 2 days before we play an opponent and just getting a feel on what they're doing, and then being able to, you know, talk about that and translate that back to the audience on the radio. But, man, just walking into a college basketball arena when it's game time just still gives me chills after all these years. I mean, I graduated in 93 and I've been involved in some form of college basketball ever since then. So it's just like a high for me, to be honest with you.
Sure. I think the process for me, you mentioned you enjoy the going to practice a day or two before the game and then relaying that to the fans and stuff. I mean, for me, my prep's a little different than what you do, because I'm more so the information background of the players. And I enjoy that process, a day or two going through the online rosters and information, and also understanding what the game plan is a little bit and trying to set you up for things. So for me, it's kind of the process. Then it's time to perform, kind of like a player, where you have your scouting report, then you go perform, the game's over, you move on to the next game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't do near as much preparation as you do. I mean, I can look at stats pretty much on the other team and figure out what their players' tendencies are. And, and if you look at their assists, shooting percentages, you know, rebounds, foul attempts, and that type of thing. But then just in the flow. You do a really good job of knowing when to throw it over to me. And hopefully I try to get my point across as quick as I can to get it back to you, especially now with the 30-second shot clock. It was a lot easier when it was 45 seconds and 35 seconds. You had a lot more time to talk. But, no, it's fun, and it's not easy as people think. You know, some people have tried. I know a couple people have filled in me. They're like, wow, how do you, I had to talk so fast and so quick and get my point across. I mean, so it's not as easy as it looks, but it's a challenge sometimes, but a fun challenge.
You mentioned what you try to do with the game prep and relay that across to the fans. What would you say your style is as a color commentator?
Oh, gosh. I don't know if I have a style. I try, and I've had people tell me this before, that when they listen to me, they can picture what happened, you know, way I describe it, and they can picture it in their head, and it makes sense to them, if that makes sense. So I'm not sure what style you would call that, but descriptive, maybe.
Yeah. I think what's worked well is from your perspective, you know, you're honest. You're not a homer in terms of, hey, you're going to say something that's not true just to excite the fans. But I do think whenever I listen back to games, I can tell you are passionate about UE. You want them to win. I've always tried to be kind of in the category of, hey, I want to be honest with what's going on. When people listen to us, hey, yes, we want UE to win, but we're not going to be homers. And I kind of get the feel of, like, I stay more so in the neutral lane a little bit. You kind of bring the fan aspect. I think it works well.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think you have to, you know, I don't like berating players because, well, sure. I guess now they are getting paid to play. I used to say, hey, they're not professionals, aren't getting paid to play, but certainly not as much at our level as, you know, the big time people. But I do try to point out a weakness or mistake they made in a professional way without, you know, saying, you know, whatever the case is, not being too negative. But so probably my toughest call ever was when Northern Iowa hit that last second shot on us at St. Louis. Because we had a legitimate chance to go to the NCAA. Should have went to NIT that year, but a lot of people got upset in the final game, and that limited the NIT field. But that's probably the only time that I almost broke down on the broadcast. I mean, I was so emotional where when Lance threw it to me, Lance was doing the color then, I was really choked up. I was so emotionally upset on, you know, the opportunity that was missed there and the shot that Northern Iowa make. But that was, that was a tough one.
Yeah, I think there's moments when you know, it is tough to – kind of remove yourself as a fan or a supporter of the program and still do your job. I mean, just a most recent example would be, you know, UE baseball was a win away from the tournament this past spring. Indiana State had the all-time high walk-off grand slam to force a winner take all. They lose that second game, and just, I still remember post-game just kind of being deflated for the guys, because you cover them every game, you're around them, you want them to do well, and sometimes that does interfere with the broadcast. But I think you know, we do a pretty good job of trying to remove ourselves from that and still give the fans a solid broadcast. But looking forward to starting the year. Before we talk about this year's group, I'm just curious from your perspective. Obviously, the last few years have been difficult from a win-loss perspective. The COVID year, they finished fifth. The year before that, you know, you didn't have a conference win. The last 2 years were tough. So I'd say three of the last 4 years have been hard. And I'm just curious from your perspective, having played here in the early 90s and you've been a part of these broadcasts forever, how tough has the last 3 or 4 years been?
It's been pretty tough just because I want what's best for the university, not only the university, but especially the basketball team, because that's where my passion is. That's where I put my blood, sweat, and tears over my 5 years here, one redshirt year here. But it's been tough, but I've also understood the behind the scenes, how the landscape's changed since I played. It's not as easy to, you know, have 3 out of 4 of your seasons, 20 over 20 win seasons, and go to the NCAA 3 out of 4 times. I mean, it's just changed. It really has. And so that part is a little frustrating, but I understand. You know, and I try to talk to former players who are like, what's wrong? What's going on down there? And so I try to give them the inside and outside of things that are going on. But, you know, what's good is, you know, we've had a couple unfortunate incidents over the past 3 or 4 years, but Ragland has brought a shot of excitement to this program starting last year, even though it was a tough year. And I told everybody it's going to be tough, so just get ready for it. This year, a little bit more expectations. Coaching staff has more expectations. Fans have more expectations. So, and I think they're definitely going to take a step forward. How big that step is, maybe we'll talk about in a little bit.
How do you view the rebuilding process at a school like Evansville? So your mid-major schools, obviously you have NIL coming into play with your Power Fives especially. But, you know, the old model was you get a group in here, a group of freshmen, you work them out for 4 years, and hopefully by the time they're seniors, you have an established program. Well, now you're recruiting kids, and if you have a good year or a player has a great year, you're trying to recruit them to stay and not go somewhere else. So do you think the days of having a consistent winner every year at a mid-major is realistic, or do you think it's going to be kind of a more of a bumpy road?
That is a really good question. Time will tell. I think the higher the mid-major is, almost to a high major, it's going to be a lot easier because they're going to have more NIL money, and they're going to be able to, you know, get kids from that aspect, because a lot of times it's coming down to that at that level. I think from UE's standpoint, I think they can get some kids that are at a higher level that aren't playing to come back down here and play. Also, like schools especially private schools. Like St. Mary's does a great job of it. Out in California is going towards the European route or mm-hmm. the foreign route, which we've got some foreign players on our team this year. Because they don't know the difference, you know,
sure.
not that we're trying to hide it from them, but, you know, if they come over here and have a good experience and then that spreads to, you know, Australia or Canada or wherever the case may be, then I think that's a niche they can get to.
See, on the flip side with how the college landscape is now, you can also rebuild quicker because of that transfer portal. So you can grab guys and you get better maybe in a couple years quicker than you could in previous.
Yeah. Yeah. The only negative thing I see about that is it's so hard when you rebuild every year, the chemistry. You know, sometimes I think you'll get lucky and have a lot of chemistry. If you do it that way, then the next year you might have more talent, but less chemistry. You know, I'm not getting the ball enough, or he's not passing to me, or, you know, coach is not playing me enough. I mean, so it can go. So you don't get to know the kid, really the background of the kid. And, you know, sometimes you just have to take the best player, not knowing if he's going to fit in with the group of kids, how he's going to fit in with the group of kids that you have.
All right, so NIL was not around 1993 whenever you graduated. But if Scott Schreffler was playing today, what would a dream NIL deal be for you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. You know what? I never thought about it. I probably would have thought about it, but I just, I mean, my passion for the game, and I mean, I should have been studying a lot of times, but I was over here in the gym shooting and doing my workouts and all that type of thing. So that's a good question. Probably a car.
Yeah, there you go.
I grew up on a farm and I drove a Chevy S10 with no air conditioning, 4-speed, my 4-5 years here. So I'd say definitely a car with air conditioning or a truck. I wouldn't be picky.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about this group a little bit. You've been at practice quite a bit. I know you have a close relationship with Coach Snow, and you went to the scrimmage at Ford Center a few weeks ago. Let's just start with a general overview. What do you like about this group so far?
Versatility and excitement and just their team attitude right now. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, for instance, somebody dives on the floor, there's 3 or 4 guys running over there to help them up. You know, somebody makes a great move, the bench is into it. You know, in years past, sometimes our bench looked like they were going to a funeral over there. And, boy, there was a lot of excitement when people aren't playing. So I think the hardest thing in basketball, especially when you have depth like we're going to have, is – and it's easy now because there's no games and, you know, we haven't decided playing time, but is being happy for someone else's success. And that's what right now, that's what I see in this team is they don't care who makes it or how it works out or if my team wins in the scrimmage or that. Everybody's sincerely happy for maybe that individual or that team as a whole.
One thing Coach Ragland mentioned last week, they started a stat in practice is touches in terms of high fives after a good play or if you call out, you know, a certain good play from a teammate. Is that something you guys did back in the day where you'd pay attention to those little details?
You know what? As a captain, I really implemented the point.
Yeah.
Like, you know, because we had the motion offense, so there's a lot of passing, and then, you know, it's easy. And passing's tough. I mean, people think, oh, he's open, get it to him. Well, you got somebody all over you. You might have to pick up your dribble, pivot, and make a bounce pass around, whatever the case may be. But whenever somebody made a great pass and whoever scored it, they always had to point at their teammate and say thanks or good pass or whatever the case may be. So, and that really makes you feel good, really. Yeah. I mean, I had quite a few assists, but anytime somebody did, it made me feel special and makes me want to do it again and help that guy out. So any encouragement you can give somebody from a good play, if you can keep that, like you're saying, high five or a little point or whatever, I mean, that just totally builds the chemistry.
Let's break this group down a bit. We'll kind of start with the returners. Aces fans will be familiar with these names, but Kenny Strawbridge Jr. last year led the team in scoring, and I've gone on record saying this in some other interviews. I thought last year, you know, he wasn't as efficient as the Aces needed to be, and also he wasn't surrounded by a ton of other scoring options. I think he had to force some things, especially when the shot clock got deep. But I think for Kenny Strawbridge this year, we'll see if you agree, is he'll be more efficient, he'll have some more space to maybe play one-on-one in certain situations. What are your thoughts on Kenny from last year and what you hope to see improve this year?
Well, something he's already improved is his conditioning. I mean, he's lost some weight. He doesn't even look like the Kenny last year. He would get tired quicker. He moved a lot slower last year, but he's really in shape. His first step's a lot quicker. I think he's going to be able to post up or square up or get to the rim a little quicker than he did last year, and his shot is better right now too. Mm-hmm. I think he's worked harder over the summer because he knows this is his last go around, and he wants to play professional ball. Obviously, probably not in the NBA, but you know, if you want to play, and he's worked his butt off this summer, and I think we're going to see some good things out of him.
From the forward position or center, whatever you want to say, Sekou Kalay and Yassine Toumi. Sekou had to battle some injury last year, and I think looks a lot stronger and more together than he did a year ago. And hopefully for Toumi as well, the game slows down. What are your thoughts on those two guys?
Yeah, and before I say that, I want to say one other thing about Strawbridge. Is he's got to play to his strengths. Last year, I thought when he got tired offensively, he just jacked up a three.
Yeah.
Now what I see in practice when you know, he doesn't have to force up the three. He's putting it on the deck and maybe drawing people and maybe making a pass or, you know, doing a long post up where he's backing his guy down on the dribble. So I think that's going to be he's going to be able to play to his strengths a lot more this year. So we'll start with Calais. He was hurt last year, so and again, he hasn't played a whole lot. But I think he knows what his strengths and weaknesses are, mm-hmm. and I think he's accepted that, and he'll play that role. He knows he's got to be a good rebounder, a good defender, off penetration, be ready to catch the ball and go, because right now he's really not developed a back-to-the-basket type of game. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's on the passer. Like, don't throw it to him when right. he's posting up, because that puts him in a bad spot to be successful. So, but he knows his role. He's going to play hard and do the, you know, set screens and do the dirty work that he knows is going to get him on the floor. I think with Toomey, you're going to see a guy a lot more under control this year from what I've seen. You know, last year, again, him and Strawbridge kind of had to maybe be a little more aggressive than they wanted to be. So he was – and, man, he's got a motor, though. And I, evidently, he played pretty well down. For you, those of you listening that don't know, Jeff and I were talking about this before we got on the air. We had a scrimmage with Lipscomb mm-hmm. down in Nashville, Tennessee, and I think Toomey played pretty well down there by all accounts. But I think a much more controlled player, and I think the game's going to move a lot slower for him this year. Yeah. Last year, it looked like he was in a hurry a lot.
The last main returner, Gage Bobe, had to play a lot of minutes last year. Obviously, there's more competition at the guard spot now this year, so I would anticipate a bit of a decreased role with Bobe in terms of minutes. But Coach Ragland, you know, has mentioned he still shoots the ball very well. He's good defensively. He knows all the concepts. He's been through the battles for the last few years. So while his minutes, you know, might deteriorate a little bit this year, he's still going to be an important piece.
Yes, and he's going to get some playing time.
Yeah.
I mean, everything I've seen in practice, he's going to get some playing time just from the things you said. He's a bulldog out there. He knows, even though he might be limited with some athleticism and some other things, he's a grinder. He's a competitor. He's yeah. the one who'll dive on the floor and get the team fired up. And as you said, I mean, second half of the season, NBC, wasn't he first or second in the league for three-point shooting?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, or maybe the whole NBC.
He was at the top for a good stretch, yeah.
yeah.
I can't remember where he finished, but yeah, he was at the top for a good stretch, yeah.
So I think his minutes won't be as much as last year, but he is going to play.
Yeah. All right, some new faces Aces fans are probably anxious to hear about. We'll start with the big name in terms of last name, Hafner, back in the Purple Aces uniform. Cam comes from Eastern Illinois, where he played one season for Marty Simmons. He was the OVC Freshman of the Year. He shot over 40% from three, and I'll be honest, one of my concerns with him coming in was going to be his size at this level, but to me, he's more athletic than I thought he was.
Yeah, he's got his dad's – now, his dad was a little – Scott was a little taller. He's about 6'4". Cam's not quite that tall, but – so Scott, it was interesting, and Cam's this way too. He couldn't jump off 1 foot very well, you know. You would think, oh, he could sky up and dunk anyway. But jumping off 2 feet, his dad, Scott, could really get up, and that's what helped him on his jump shot. If you watch Cam, his vertical, his two, you know, when he jumps off 2 feet, when he's shooting his jumper, he really elevates, so that's good. But you look at his improvement. Last year, when he went to Eastern Illinois, pre-conference play, he didn't play much at all.
Yeah.
And then took really mid-conference last year until he started playing a lot of Eastern Illinois. So his improvement, and he puts the time in, and he wants to be good. And he's smart. He knows his limitations, too. He knows he's a shooter right now. I think he can develop into something more, but and that's, you know, he understands that, and he's going to play his role.
Antonio Thomas, an experienced guard. He spent 2 years at Bradley, the past 2 years at Kentucky Wesleyan, so he has 1 year left with the Aces. Watching him the last few weeks in practice, he kind of reminds me of an old-school guard. He's not afraid of the mid-range jumper. He doesn't really over-penetrate. He's a good passer. What are your thoughts on Antonio?
Yeah, I like the way he plays. Plays under control. Again, knows his strengths and weaknesses. He's a good defender on the ball. Runs the show. He's not going to take crazy shots from a point guard standpoint, as you said, and I think he's just a solid player, and I think you know, he's going to get a lot of playing time at the point this year.
Yeah, I think the best overall player in terms of the new faces, just there's really not a weakness in his game, is the NAIA transfer, Ben Hummerkaus from Huntington, and again, he's not a big-name transfer coming in, but I think this is a guy the Aces fans are going to love.
Yeah, and I think it's a kid that a lot of people missed on coming out of high school, mm-hmm. And we played Huntington last year, and I noticed him, but you know, we're more focused on our guys, but he's been a surprise to me. I mean, he's a lot better than I thought he was, and he is sneaky athletic. I mean, he's got a good first step. He had a really good game down at Lipscomb. I think he had 16-10, mm-hmm. So just a solid player. Hit some threes, but he can also go inside. And he's versatile. He can guard post or he can guard perimeter players.
A couple of the new faces to wrap up here, breaking down the team. Tanner Cuff is another JUCO transfer. He's a 6'6", 6'7", can be guard, can be forward. And that's the case with a lot of these players. I mean, UE will have a chance at times this year to play positionless basketball.
Yeah, they will. And from a defense standpoint, that means they could do a five-way switch
yeah.
a lot of times with certain lineups out there from a defense standpoint. Cuff's gotten better since the first time I saw him practice till I saw him last week. shooting the ball pretty good. Mm-hmm. Still struggles a little bit on defense. You know, he hasn't caught up with coming from JUCO to this level as far as defense, just a lot faster and all that. But he's going to get better. He's a competitor, and like his attitude.
I know with Cuff, I'd say he's more of a crafty type of guard. I asked Coach Ragland, would you say he's a good shooting guard? And he said, well, knock on wood, so far he shot the ball better than he thought he would be, but mm-hmm. more of a guy that's probably going to put the ball on the floor, create for others, and get to the rim, right?
Yeah, yeah, I think so too. And he's a good passer interiorly. Sometimes he tries to be a little too fancy with the pass, but that'll come with time. And evidently he played pretty well down at Lipscomb as well.
And then Chuck Bailey is the four-star freshman that comes in, and I went on the record and said this. When I watched him during the summer, I don't know, he didn't match expectations, especially with his shot, but I think that has improved, and they've worked some things the last few months. His speed and strength in transition is on a different level than you see a lot of Valley freshmen. So I think with Chuck Bailey, a little bit raw, going to be some growing pains, but also there'll be some excitement there too.
Yeah, he can be electric, especially you know, in the transition. He's quick. He's got quick handles. He can get by people, and he can shoot the three. Not great, but they've really worked with his shot, as you mentioned. But his threes are going to be when he's open.
Yeah.
I mean, not with somebody coming at him, or he's got to be set, take his time and shoot. But he's going to become a better shooter. But yeah, I think he'll come off the bench, would be my guess. But I think when he comes in, he's going to bring a lot of energy to the game.
Yeah. And then that's about nine players that I envision in terms of being rotational players this year. There are some newcomers that I guess could fight for some minutes, like a Braylon Jackson. You know, he's young, kind of inexperienced in the defensive end. Coach Ragland said, you got Josh Hughes, the big Australian. He's been better than I thought. He has been in a boot as of late last week. Don't have an injury update for this week with Josh, but you also have Guy and Michael Day. Of those group of players, anybody else stand out to you?
Hughes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until I guess he got hurt, man, he was making really good progress. Yeah. And
you think he's a guy that, if healthy, could see quite a few minutes?
Yes. And I think it would increase over time.
Yeah.
Because he's, from start of practice till he hurt his foot, I mean, he was improving. He can step out and shoot a little bit. Obviously, he's thin. He's going to get pushed around a little bit this year. But if he keeps developing, he's going to have – and we can keep him, hopefully.
Sure.
Yeah. You know how that works anymore. But he could have a really bright future. I don't think he's going to play this week on Saturday, but hopefully we can get him on the mend, because out of those four, he's the one that can definitely give us some help this year. The other ones are just a little further behind. I don't know if there's any. They'll probably redshirt some. I don't know who, but I would say they won't redshirt Hughes, I wouldn't think. But out of those other three, maybe redshirt.
Yeah.
A couple of them, one of them, all of them, who knows. But, yeah, they're good kids. They work hard. And Braylon's got a big upside. And I think Day does too. He's just not used to this level yet.
One thing I wanted to bring up with the team, obviously you have your 13 scholarship players, four walk-ons this year. They're all local kids. And, you know, in previous years, it's been, you know, 10 or 11 guys, it seems like, in practice going at it. Not a whole lot of depth or competition, really. But that's changed this year, guys fighting for minutes and the walk-ons. How important do you think it is for the program just having some local kids there for the interest? Plus, you have four walk-ons that are able to give some competition in practice.
Yeah, and they give competition in practice. You know, when you only have 10 or 11 guys going out to practice, it only takes like two injuries.
Right.
And then you got a coach filling in who's out of shape and going to blow his Achilles or whatever. But having those guys out there, and you have to have the right walk-ons, and we do. I mean, these are great kids. They're excited. They're happy when their team does well. And they know they're not going to play much, but from what I've seen, they bust their butt in practice and have great attitudes, and it's nice to have those extra bodies out there for practice.
So we look at the schedule, the non-conference, which will begin November 6th, home against Miami, Ohio. The Aces are home more this year than they were last year in the non-conference. Some of the notable games, home game against Ball State on the 18th, and then the two big road games at BYU December 5th and at Cincinnati December 29th. A couple of OVC teams coming to Ford Center as well. So as you kind of look at the schedule landscape, what do you think realistic expectations are for this group? You don't have to guess necessarily an amount of wins, but what do you think will be a good year for this group?
Yeah, competitive games, number one, and then learning how to win those. I think, you know, certain games we have this year are going to be pretty close.
Yeah.
So we've got to learn how to win. And once you get over that hump of learning how to win and know you can do it, or at least have a confidence, hey, it's a close game, we're going to pull this out type of attitude, those wins can, you know, add up a little bit more. But we're going to take a step forward this year. Again, how big that step is, because – you know, I haven't looked at everybody's roster that we're playing. I mean, they could have a whole new team from last year, and you hear a team name, you're like, oh, they're no good, but they got three, high major Division I transfers that came in to play their senior year. So definitely a step up, and I think the fans are going to enjoy watching this team play. They're going to play hard. They're going to have excitement, win or lose.
All right, so just a few days away from the first game on the radio, Saturday against Wabash, 1 o'clock tip-off. What is Scott Schroeffer doing to get ready? Are you getting some play-by-play reps in case I go down? are you practicing on TV? What's Scott Schroeffer doing to get ready?
Oh, side bends and sit-ups. That's all I need to do, Jevin.
Get your sprints in, right? All right, well, that's the Hall of Famer, Scott Schroeffer. Certainly can't wait for Saturday and also the season opener November 6th. Should see some bigger crowds this year, more energy, and looking forward to the season.
Yeah, I am too, and right now there's a lot of excitement, and again, this is a building process. We're going to take a step forward this year, and I'm looking forward to it.
So once again, thanks to the Hall of Famer, Scott Schroeffer, for joining us on this episode of Aces on the Air podcast. Always fun to chat hoops or just chat in general with the Hall of Famer, and can't wait for year 6 with him across the radio. We'll talk to you again this Saturday at 12:30 for the pregame show, 1 o'clock tip-off, Evansville and Wabash, the exhibition game from Ford Center. Before we move on to part 2 of this episode with Director of Athletics Ziggy Ziegfried, want to thank Taroni's, sponsor of Aces on the Air podcast. Taroni's Forget-Me-Not in a Wine Bock. Be sure, whenever you attend any Aces athletic event on campus this year, get your $3 off voucher at the check-in table for that event. Again, that is for any sports event on campus at the University of Evansville. You can get a $3 off voucher for Taroni's. And also want to thank Brinker's Jewelers. They are the official jeweler of Purple Aces basketball. When you think about the perfect engagement ring, wedding bands, specialty gifts, fine jewelry, and watches in Evansville, thank who the Purple Aces thank, and thank Brinker's Jewelers. Well, I think it's time to hear from Director of Athletics, Ziggy Ziegfried. He is in year number 2. We get an update on how the fall sports season is going, the progress from the athletic department side here in year 2. And we also talk about basketball, his thoughts on Coach Ragland and Coach Robin Sherwells, what they're doing, rebuilding the two programs here at Evansville. And it's a fun conversation. Here is Ziggy Ziegfried. Ziggy, thanks for joining me this week on the podcast. It's certainly an exciting time. You've got the overlap of fall sports and also the new start with the basketball season. So I guess let's just start. How is year 2 going for you?
You know, it's gone great. It's year 1. I knew it would be a grind, a lot of work, just to kind of set the foundation and set a environment of a kind of forward-moving train. And then year 2, we expect to kind of be in that growth phase to take the next steps. I think we have the right staff here. We have the right coaches. And I think you're going to continue to see progress when it comes to the Purple Aces.
I think I asked Coach Ragland this question last week. He's in year 2. Just how much more comfortable are you now in terms of your work life? Also, you think family life, you're settled in. I know the kids are probably ingrained in the community as well. Just how much more comfortable are you?
Yeah, you know, I went basically like 12 months without working out. So I was kind of falling apart from that standpoint. And now I'm working out 3 times a week and trying to get in shape. My kids are all involved in different sports. Mm-hmm. My wife's doing great. So, you know, it's just a great place to be. And I guess you can kind of say I'm in my routine, but we're still grinding on a daily basis.
You mentioned your kids playing sports. I was going to ask how the family is doing. And what sports are they playing right now? I mean, football, soccer, is it fall baseball? What's all going on with the family?
Yeah, so both the boys are kind of – they want to be in baseball all year round, so they pretty much are. Mm-hmm. The girls play some softball. One of them plays some gymnastics. One's about to get involved with some basketball. So really, it's a mixture. They're just they're really active kids. They love sports, and they're all a little different, but you know, they all are Purple Aces fans, which has been great.
In what ways do you feel like, from a university perspective, that we're in a better spot than we were last year? You mentioned people in the right spot in terms of job wise. I know you guys released a strategic plan. Was that back in the spring or summer when that came out? So just in what ways do you feel like the university is in a better spot?
You know, I'll start with the university as a whole. If you compare this to like 2-3 years ago, there's just a lot more positive energy in the community. There's construction going on campus. The president has done a great job to just kind of push us forward overall. When it comes to the athletics department, you know, the best way I can explain it is when you come into a new situation, and you know, there had been some tough years the couple years before I got here, and sometimes you almost need some turnover in staff, and all great people. But I felt like we needed some new roles for people who stayed here, and then also some to bring in some new energy. And obviously, at the same time, we were creating that Pathway to Excellence strategic plan. So now we have a lot of new people or new roles, and then we have the plan, and now we're implementing the plan. So I think most of it, though, if I had to just put together an elevator speech, it's really getting the right people on the bus. And I feel like that's what we have now here.
I think it can be compared to Coach Ragland, you know, leading a program. He gets here year one. He has to evaluate things, you know, get the right people on board as well with the staff, and then you start to recruit your own players and stuff. So I think there is some similarity with there with what you're trying to do with the athletic department, also Coach Ragland rebuilding the men's basketball program.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, we knew when he came in, Coach Ragland and I made the decision, and basically I asked him about his goals. And he clearly stated to set the foundation for future success. We were not looking for him to come in and flip it overnight, because quite frankly, sometimes you can do that, but you do it with the wrong steps. You bring in the wrong student athletes. You bring in the wrong coaches, whatever it could be, to have quick success. We're looking for long-term success. So everything we do is built around long-term relationships, doing things the right way in our strategic plan. The core value of integrity is key. It's the first one listed. So, you know, a lot of similarities between men's basketball and the athletics department as a whole. The bottom line is we're going to do things the right way, and we're not skipping steps.
Say, what's impressed you most about Coach Ragland? That was your first hire whenever you got the job. So now that you've been around him for over a year, what impresses you most about him?
Yeah, you know what? When he says he's going to do something, he does it. Everything he does is genuine. He does not try to get outside of who he is. You know, when he says he loves the student athletes, he loves them. And that includes the ones that are here. That includes the ones that, you know, maybe ended up being encouraged to go to the transfer portal or whatever. He loves them. He treats them all like they are his son. So that's impressed me, his work ethic, how he stays calm under pressure. And really what I've probably been most impressed about is he's very careful. He could go out and, let's say, get a person in the transfer portal who will come in and score a lot of points, but he's not going to take that person if they don't fit the overall character of what he's trying to build here with the men's basketball program. So that's what surprised me the most. Sometimes I can get into fan mode, and I'm like, you got to go get this guy. And, you know, whether it be wherever that person may be, you know, Coach Ragland's like, yeah, I've done a little bit of research there, and, you know, I know he could be a good ball player, but I don't think he's the right fit for us. So I have a lot of respect for him, again, wanting to do things the right way because he cares about UE, he cares about the community.
What's impressed me the most as well is just his engagement. So if I go watch practice and he's got whatever, a supporter in there watching practice as well, you know, he'll come over and talk to us for 10 to 15 minutes about what's going on. He also trusts his coaching staff. And I think we've seen that too with a lot of the community events that we've had. For example, we had a tip-off dinner a couple weeks ago, Meeks Madness. Just his engagement with the community is very impressive.
It is. And I'll tell you, I was in the practice facility one day with a supporter. And we were only in there a couple minutes because we just walked through. And I can remember he called me right after practice. He's like, man, I'm sorry. I was so in the zone. I didn't get a chance to come say hello. Well, we were in there for 2 minutes.
Right.
So, yeah, he really has a strong sense of the importance of relationships.
How do you view, and this is both on the men's and women's side, just rebuilding a basketball program in today's state of college athletics? You know, in previous years, the motto would be, hey, you get a group in here, it's a group of freshmen, they're here for 4 years. Well, that's not really the case anymore in college athletics. If someone gets really good, they move on, so now you have to recruit your own players. How do you view the sustained success at a program like Evansville? It's a mid-major school where you have guys moving all over the place.
Yeah, you know, it's we experienced this a little bit at Bakersfield. We went to the – just real quick, went to the NCAA tournament in men's basketball, first time ever at the Division I level. We, meaning me and the coach, head coach, made the decision, said, hey, we probably need to start recruiting freshmen. And we did that, and then transfer portal error comes in, and all those great freshmen ended up transferring. So I know that's not – that's just an example. So The way I see it now is you have to have strong relationships with your players, first of all. You have to be able to bring in the right transfers, because once they do transfer in, there's only a one-time exception where they can become immediately eligible. So you get someone like a Cam Hafner, who's now here and, you know, absolutely loves it. But if there were someone who transferred and then transferred again somewhere else, they're going to have to sit out a year. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is just planning. You know, there's going to be some times where you have a good season or a player has a breakout year. You got to prepare for if that person may move on and have some backup plans. It's kind of like, you know, if a coach is having a lot of success for an AD, automatically I start thinking, okay, I want to take care of that coach, but if he or she leaves, I got to be prepared to bring in someone else. Right. And so I think that's a lot of it is just preparation, not being naive, and preparing for all circumstances.
Women's basketball, they'll have their first exhibition game November 2nd. I know Robin was here whenever you were hired. She's going to year three, but she's done great things with the program as well. Last year they won the most games since 2016-17. A lot of new faces this year, but hoping to take another stride forward. What do you like about what she's done with the program?
Yeah, when I first got here, I have said for many years, and I haven't had to hire a women's basketball coach at my previous AD spot, but I've always said that if I do, the first person I'm going to call is an agent called Brian Stenchek, who seems to just represent all the best women's basketball coaches. So I get here, and Robin, that's her agent. So I was like, okay, I know I got a good one. She is someone that wakes up every morning thinking about the program, goes to sleep every night thinking about it. She's really invested. She has probably been the best relationship builder that I've seen as a women's basketball coach in my 20-plus year career. So it's that. It's her determination for success. And I have no doubt that she's going to be successful. I know there's a lot of new faces this year, so it'll take some time for them to gel. But, you know, if there's anyone that can get it done, it's Robin.
This is a good transition into a fall sports update with men's soccer. You guys removed the interim tag for Robbie Tarver, the head coach for the men's soccer program. What do you see in Coach Tarver that allowed you to remove the interim tag?
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because from day one, when I first got here, when he was the associate head coach, or I think assistant actually at that time, I was always intrigued by Robbie because of his work ethic, because of his connection and leading recruiting of a complete turnaround of a men's soccer program. And when I put him in the interim position, you know, I was obviously watching. To me, and I made this clear from day one, it had nothing to do with wins and losses. Mm-hmm. I wanted to see signs that confirmed what I thought, that Robbie would be the right guy for long-term success. Because, again, I'm not in here to do a one-year, two-year thing.
Sure.
So I saw that. I saw it with his recruiting ability, with his experience, you know, coming from a great program in Louisville. I saw it with his relationships with the student-athletes, how he handled adversity. On the technical side, you know, with his background on just his coach's licensing, he has a master's in sport management with a focus of coaching. Like, mm-hmm. You can tell he was meant to be a coach, and he's going to be a very successful one. Well, I'd prefer to keep him here than have him go somewhere else. And so, really, it was a no-brainer. I specifically made that announcement after a loss. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to show that it had nothing to do with what happened this season. Even though we still have, you know, we could have some good things happen this season, it's all about long term.
I'm curious, as you look into the characteristics for a head coach and making your hire, is it different for each sport? Obviously, you have your core values for the university, but is it sport specific what you're looking for?
It is. You know, the way we're structured here, and I'll try to make this not confusing, is we try to make sure all of our student-athletes have a great experience when it comes to academics and their overall student-athlete experience. Mm-hmm. But there are some programs who are funded from a competitive standpoint, scholarships, stuff like that, at a higher level for team success. So there's no doubt that how I may hire a coach in men's soccer versus I'll try to use a sport that we don't have, water polo, which I used to have at a previous place. It's going to look a lot different. So to answer your question, yes, it does. And it's also based off of, you know, resources. And basically when I'm looking at who I want to bring in, there's a lot of different elements that come along to the overall program and the expectations for that program.
Exciting for the women's soccer team. They clinched a Missouri Valley Conference tournament bid on Sunday, so they will be playing in the tournament coming up later this week. And I know they have been very competitive this year. I know quite a few ties in their results in the Valley, but always exciting when a team can make the conference tournament.
It is, and that's a very young team that it's been great to watch them develop. You feel like they're in every game. You know, they had a tough match here with Missouri State to end the regular season, but overall – you can see the progression of the program, and you see defense play really well. We have a great goalie. And then when it comes to offense, you can see some of the newcomers that they're starting to get confidence on putting the ball in the back of the net. So I think that's a program that's in really good shape for the future.
Final point about the fall sports update with volleyball. I know they're battling for a top eight spot to make the conference tournament as well. They're home this weekend, two big matches on Friday and Saturday. How about that longest match in NCAA history? That was a couple weeks ago against UIC. The final score in that fifth set was 36-34. I think it took 3 hours and 45 minutes. You were there, right?
You know, actually, my wife and kids were there, okay. But I had a conflict, but I did watch the entire game. And what I will say, it is the best volleyball game that I've ever watched. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think I would have said that had we lost, but it was so exciting to watch them battle back to see the game that Julia Cardona had, and not just her, it was everybody.
Yeah, 40 kills in that match from Cardona. Just where do you think the volleyball program is at right now? I know they probably had a bit higher expectations this year, but still a chance to make the conference tournament. It was a fun year last year hosting the Valley Tournament. Where do you think the program's at right now?
You know, I think we're in good shape. I believe we're going to finish strong, first of all, for this season. I think it's one of those things that, as a program, you lose someone like Alondra Vasquez from last year, who was, you know, really our top player, or one of our two top players. I think that impacted us a little bit this year. I think the program has lost some games that maybe Coach Morales felt like they should won. So overall, what Fernando has done turning around that program since he became head coach has been very positive. I think, and if you watch him right now, I think you'll see that he is very eager to get it back going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, and I think he'll do that.
Last thing I want to touch on here today with you, Ziggy, is this past weekend. I know UE Baseball played in the Cure FA game hosted by USI at Bossy Field. I understand it's a pretty good turnout. Of course, it's fun to see the Aces in action, but also it was for a good cause on Saturday.
Yeah, it really was. And I didn't know a lot of the background of that game. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to be there, had my whole family there to watch and just see. It's good to get two hometown teams together for a good cause. And, you know, I thought, you know, we kind of expected our guys to come out and play well because we have a very talented team. And, you know, they did just that. And hats off to USI also. And I'm glad that they invited us to play in the charity event because they basically get to make those decisions on who they play. But also hats off to our fans who came out to watch.
You mentioned very good baseball team. Just about everybody back from last year, a group that was one win away from making the NCAA tournament. Almost 140 games as well, so high expectations this year. Get to host the Missouri Valley Conference tournament. I know it's a big deal for West Carroll, the program, the university, the city, you name it. What all goes into that? How do you guys get to host conference tournaments? And then also, what are the next steps now here until the end of May? What all has to happen?
Yeah, so this was a little unique because it was a late decision on who was going to host this year for various reasons. So what goes into it is, first, you have to – and this is all going to change, which is another discussion. But right now, it's kind of a bid process. Mm-hmm. And you put in to the MVC that, hey, we would like to host – if you'll select us. And you talk about, okay, here's how we can take care of hotels. Here are some of the venue, the facility issues that I know have come up in the past that we're addressing, like additional space in the press box. So it's basically putting out that we may meet the criteria to host because there's requirements. And then it's basically just coming down to pushing hard for us to be selected. And we were able to earn that selection. And ultimately now, we got to fulfill everything that we said we were going to do. We're working with Dunn Hospitality on our as our hotel partner. Mm-hmm. We're working on getting the press box temporarily increased in size. And basically, we're just making sure we put on a first-class experience for everyone involved. And hopefully, we want a dog pile at the end of that.
Be a lot of fun. Ziggy, thanks for joining me this week on Aces on the Air podcast. We hope to have you on maybe once a month or so. But ready for basketball season. We'll see you around.
Yep. Thank you, Jevin.
All right. Once again, a big thank you to Director of Athletics Ziggy Ziegfeld and also the Hall of Famer Scott Schreffler. Fun episode 3 of Aces on the Air. And a reminder that if you have missed any previous episodes or missed any future episode, you can always go back and listen on your own time, of course. We have them archived on Spotify, Apple iTunes. Just search Aces on the Air. Also, you can go to the website, gopurpleaces.com, and under the Fans tab, we have an Aces on the Air podcast tab where all the episodes will be archived. Hope to see you at Ford Center this Saturday, the lone exhibition game. Be your first chance to see this Aces group in person in a game setting. Should be a lot of fun, and as you've heard both Ziggy and Scott mention, we anticipate a nice step forward with the program this year. Should be an enjoyable group to watch, so come out to Ford Center for the 1 o'clock tip-off on Saturday against Wabash, and of course, if you can't make it in person, we would love to have you across the Purple Aces Sports Network on the radio, flagship 107.1 WJPS, myself and the Hall of Famer Scott Schreffler, while the broadcast starting at 12:30. And I hope you'll join us again next week for Aces on the Air. Until then, I'm Jevin Rebin. Take care and go Aces.